This is The Topic is Trek, episode 79 for Friday, November 13th, 2020. Coming up in this episode, a Star Trek composer makes us take notes. We ponder, what would Picard say? Discovery heads out again, sorta, kinda. All that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. The Trills are alive with the sound of music. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another thrill-packed adventure on The Topic is Trek. Boy, that sounds really good. We'll see if I have a payoff for that introduction. So, to help me out right away, beaming in to join me, as always, with a unique catchphrase that I'm sure will stick this time, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Schwing!
I was wrong, apparently. All right, and also beaming in to join me is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
You're right up there with consistent Charlie X.
Right. Well, gentlemen, I would like to say congratulations to us because apparently we've decided to put out a show on Friday the 13th in 2020. So
we're indeed great.
Put on your hockey mask.
Everything will be just fine. Just fine.
A hockey mask counts for COVID-19, right? They say wear a mask.
I think so. Okay. I mean, Jason never had any problems. Well, he had lots of problems, actually. I suppose I shouldn't say that. Many, many problems.
Wear a mask. You don't want to sound like a Gorn.
See, Freddy Krueger didn't have a mask, and look where it got him.
I know. It kept scratching at it with the claw. Anyway, all right, let's move on, shall we? It's time, should Charlie be open to the subject matter, for us to open up subspace chatter.
What do you say, Charlie? Subspace chatter.
Charlie, we've been over this before. We're going to do it whether you're with us or not. So I think you need to get on board with the whole subject matter. Matter of fact, we're going to start off right away with a story that Chuck is going to tell us, Charlie. So take that.
Alrighty. Recently, the Smithsonian Institution's Air and Space Museum hosted a live chat with three experts in the field of Star Trek and that other Star Wars props. Moderator Marty Kelsey, one of the hosts of the STEM in 30 TV show for middle school students, spoke with Dr. Margaret Whitecamp. Oh, she's the curator. I saw her on a show just the other night. She curates the museum, Social and Cultural History of Spaceflight Collection. Madeline Burkett, a collections and exhibitions archivist at Lucasfilm, and Oscar-winning visual effects artist Doug Drexler. Oh, these names, they just keep popping off the canvas, don't they? He, of course, worked on many productions, including Star Trek The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Enterprise. We have a link to the chat in the show notes for episode 79 over at The Topic is Trek, square brackets, you know the drill, unsquare bracket, .com.
That's supposed to read the notes part there. That's just for us. Yeah, this was an interesting video. I don't know if you guys had a chance to catch this one, but it was talking a little bit about the different franchises in terms of how these people view their work with the various franchises. And of course there was discussion about the Enterprise itself, and Doug Drexler was one of the people who was involved with the committee of Trek experts who went in and looked at the 11-foot model that the Smithsonian has and was giving pointers about, well, it should have this, it never had that, this is the point at which this model would have been done, and so forth and so on. So it was a very interesting talk. I I appreciated very much that Doug at the beginning of the chat, when it was thrown to him to talk about what his experience was, he was doing the kind of fumbling around that I tend to do when somebody asks me what I do. And I said, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. And once he got into the swing of things, he said, I'm fine now. Okay, let's go. Let's go. So it's very, very interesting talk. And I encourage people to check it out.
If you want something else to check out, go over on Netflix. This one just kind of popped up on my list for whatever reason. It was a show from about 2014, 2015, where they had just received the captain's chair for the traveling Star Trek exhibition. I think it was in Seattle at the time. And they also had the Enterprise model being received and started to restore it. I don't recall if they showed the finished. Actually, I think they did. Towards the end of the show, they did show with the nacelles spinning and all that good stuff.
What'd you say that was? I think I saw
can't remember what the name of the show was called. It was the History of Star Trek or something of that nature. It was about a 90-minute documentary. So it was, and Dr. Margaret was, of course, on there when she was all excited about, you know, receiving the ship. And she said, many people don't realize this, but, the Apollo space module, which is also right there in the lobby, one that landed on the moon, the Apollo 11 module, is a contemporary of the Enterprise, because they were both built in like the mid-60s.
Yeah, true.
So you don't think about that.
But the difference between them is that the Enterprise is the real thing and the lunar module is a reproduction.
It's a mock-up.
So it's odd. It's very reversal of what you think is the case. Dr. Margaret also talked about a very interesting thing. She said, we refer to the items in the collection as its because they're things. You know, this is the such and such and that's the such and such. And they were talking about, when they're discussing how they're going to be working on the Enterprise model, they say, okay, well, it's going to need this, or we're going to have to do this to it. And then she said, when it was all done, when they turned on the lights, when the thing was all finished, everyone just stood back and said, isn't she beautiful?
Yes.
So they all referred to as a she at that point.
Sure.
Very interesting.
Hey, is the Air and Space Museum still closed? Because they didn't close for... maybe for COVID, but they closed for renovation and they took the Enterprise.
They didn't close the entire thing, but they closed that section and they took the Enterprise out into storage we covered it at the time about it was going to be several years, but of course we've been doing the show for several years, so it might be closer than we think before it comes back again.
I know, right? We just started podcasting yesterday and
it seems like it.
We'll look into it, dear listener, and we'll get back to you.
I was just thinking out loud.
All right, but in the meantime, Craig, you're going to take our next story.
Yes, and on the season finale of Star Trek, the season finale of the pod of Star Trek, the Pod Directive, which is the official podcast of Star Trek, we got passed over
again.
Again, Paul F. Tompkins and Tawny Newsom speak with Jeff Russo, composer of Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard, as well as many other TV shows, including Legion and Fargo, and a founding member of the band Tonic. Russo talks about how he pulls on various aspects of the Trek universe when creating music for each of the series and how input sometimes changes his original concepts. Which I wouldn't expect anything less, right?
Yeah, but it was interesting that he talked about, I think in particular Picard, that he had originally given the theme for Picard as a much more traditional Trek, lots of horns type of thing going on with it. And when they were listening to it, they talked about the fact that, well, this is really of a more intimate story. And so he scaled back what he had originally done to that theme. So if you listen to that theme, you go, gee, it seems a lot underwhelming compared to a lot of Trek themes. Mm-hmm. That was definitely an intentional purpose, that it wasn't originally that way. And they felt like it should be pulled back and be made smaller and much more personal.
Yeah.
But he felt like he wanted to keep certain things like the flute, because to him, the flute, represented Picard.
Bring in the cello.
Yeah. I would have been, I wouldn't say disappointed. I was pleasant surprise when you hear it, you know, in there. It's just enough to kind of give you the hint. Oh, we're talking about Picard here. Here's the flute.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah. So another one worth checking out, because he talks about a lot of other things, the work he's done with the Trek, and the fact that his background is not in this type of thing, that he was with a rock band, but, you know, kind of got into the business of doing television scores.
Well, they're just like Danny Elfman.
That's right.
Yeah, that's
right.
That's not what he did at first, but then he started doing it.
And now that's what he does when he does that thing that he does.
Yes.
Next story.
And in news that I'm embarrassed that I didn't know anything about, back in 2015, Bostonian Tom Stalker proposed the creation of a monument to hometown boy made good Leonard Nimoy.
Mm.
Not much came of that initial effort. However, recently the suggestion has been picking up support from people such as Boston City Councilor Kenzie Bach, Leonard Nimoy's daughter, Julie Nimoy, and William Shatner. Shatner tweeted his support, saying, "This needs to happen. Leonard was very proud of his Boston roots." Surprisingly, Stalker doesn't consider himself a diehard Trekkie. Instead, his true appreciation for Nimoy came from learning of the former West End resident's love of Boston itself. Stalker has completed a successful round of funding for the memorial, and the project is now waiting for the final stages of its planning, which will take the form of a 25-foot stainless steel hand giving the Vulcan salutation, or Vulcan salute, if you will. So now it seems like everybody's starting to get their statues now. We've long had our Captain Kirk statue. Yep. We just got our Janeway statue, and now we're getting our Leonard Nimoy / Spock statue.
I have to think that the Janeway statue had something to do with this moving forward.
It's quite possible, because, you know, if you put out something in 2015 and it doesn't get a lot of traction, then suddenly it builds up a lot of steam. I think you may be right about that. Somebody said, "Hey, look what they're doing. We should do something like that." And, "Oh, look, there's something already here."
In retrospect, I would have loved to have heard a piece of Spock in character with a Boston accent.
Yeah, I listen, you know, for it. And I think I hear traces of it from time to time. But of course, he tries his hardest to put all that in the background. If you catch him on his appearance on The Lieutenant, the episode that he's in that Majel is also in, which was the first show that Gene Roddenberry had produced for television, yeah, you can definitely pick it up there. He's not really trying to hide anything at that point. He's you know, being kind of like a New York, Boston, Los Angeles kind of producer guy who just, the accent's all over the place, so you can definitely hear it there.
Actually, there's something on the scanners.
yeah come on, let's, you kick in your Boston accent there, Clinton.
I don't actually have as much of a Boston accent as I didn't grow up that far from Boston, but I really don't do as much. I certainly do have an accent that's an offshoot of a Boston accent, but it's nowhere near as pronounced. It never was as pronounced as that. Because I would go into Boston and go, "Boy, they talk weird here."
Yeah, I know how you feel. Everybody mistakes where I'm from by my European accent.
You will catch me saying "Kai" every once in a while, though. So
I'm going to shut up before I say something I'm going to be embarrassed about. All right.
All righty.
Hey, by the way, I do like the idea of the statue, and instead of him standing there, you know, or a statue of him stand. I think this is kind of cool. You know, the Vulcan, and behind the building, they're going to have the, and behind the building, they're going to have the,
they're not going to have the sarcastic Vulcan salute. No. They're not going to have the, no.
I'm holding out for my Zefram Cochrane reaching out to the stars.
Well, they could have put a, they could have either done that or the Vulcan loot.
Yeah,
they could have, I suppose. Well, the other tie-in, though, is that the reason it's good to choose that is because we've often heard the story that Leonard Nimoy told about where that inspiration came from.
Right.
Well, that was in a synagogue in Boston.
Oh, that's true. Okay, right.
So that So that Vulcan salutation or salute really has Boston origins as well. So it's a nice thing to be the highlight.
Okay. Yeah. I'm down with that.
All right. And now we go over to Chuck for our next story.
All right. Let's see if we can do this in one take.
And go.
Looking for just the right words to inspire your crew, or perhaps just the little league team you help coach? Well, who better to guide you than Captain Jean-Luc Picard? Just grab a copy of the new book, Star Trek, The Wisdom of Picard. Imagine starting your next Zoom call with a client saying, "Buried deep within you, beneath all the years of pain and anger, there is something that has never been nurtured. The potential to make yourself a better man. And that is what it is to be human, to make yourself more than you are." On second thought, don't do that. But still check out the book. Wow, I haven't had a dramatic reading on this show in a while.
Yeah, I was looking at the quotes and they're going, I'm not quite sure if these have any connection to everyday life and conversation. So the first thing I thought of was, well, let's use one in an everyday conversation.
Yeah, everybody says to make yourself more than you are to me every day.
Yeah, I think I'll try that on my next call with our senior VP.
Yeah. That'll work out well.
Beneath all the years of pain and anger. He's like, I just started last month.
Right.
I mean, your previous jobs, they must have made you painful and angry.
I feel your pain.
We have a link to an article that has a couple more of the quotes from the book, and you can see if you can work any of those into everyday life. Certainly, the link is in the show notes for episode 79 over at the Topic is Trek. Oh, Chuck is drinking liquid right now.
Oh, there you go.
I can drink and ding at the same time.
.com.
That's right. Right. And speaking of books.
Yes.
Star Trek Alien Spotlight is a series of one-shot comics from IDW that features insights into familiar Trek alien races. Sure, they cover the Borg and the Vulcans and all that good stuff, but there are also stories about Andorians and the Gorn. Of course, we're not sure if they're going to show what happens at a Gorn wedding, but the story might give you some idea of what wedding present to bring.
I figure if you bring gunpowder or, you know, just even the diamonds and the saltpeter.
You bring saltpeter, like diamond, charcoal, you good to go to Gorn wedding.
That's right. Go with you.
You're the bouncer, I think, maybe at the wedding with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
All right. And IDW, finally.
IDW is cleaning it up with a Star Trek comics. I'll tell you what.
Yeah. I really am, you know, I don't normally do comics, but I'm tempted if they put out in book form, like the year five series. Because that looks like it's got a lot of interesting things going on in that whole series. And I love this idea of this just one-offs, you know, one and done stories with different aliens in this alien spotlight.
Yeah. And you know, Humble Bundle, something like that. Was it earlier this year? I think it was earlier this year. I think I tried to get you guys in on it. It's like you pay what you want, and then they usually have some ebooks or even games and stuff like that. It's a big bundle, and you pay what you want.
They even had Podcasting for Dummies as part of the Humble Bumble this past summer.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I bought the Star Trek one, and they have a bunch. There is Star Trek Year 5. I'm looking at right here, issue 1 through 8.
Okay.
I got those. There's a whole bunch of them. I just started reading some of these books. Actually, to be honest with you, I downloaded them all because there was a time limit, and I put them in here, and I just kind of forgot about it. I didn't make myself a note anywhere, and I one day I come across them and went, "Whoa, I got all those Star Trek comics." So I started reading them this last week.
So what we're saying, dear friends, is coming up on an episode of The Topic is Trek, Craig will be giving us a review of 1 through 8 of Star Trek Year 5.
If you want me to, yeah. I can change gears and read those. I'll read those for the next show. How about that?
Sounds cool to me.
All right.
All right. And finally, ViacomCBS reported recently released their third quarter earnings, which topped analyst expectations, posting earnings of 91 cents per share versus expectations of 79 cents. While over at CBS All Access, soon to be known as Paramount Plus, so we better start getting used to that, subscriptions reached 17.9 million, an increase of 79% year over year. CEO Bob Bakish credited a great deal of the success on original content, such as the new entries in the Star Trek franchise. Star Trek Discovery was also featured prominently on the cover of the quarterly earnings report.
Sweet.
So we're good on Trek for a while. We're still in business for a bit longer, folks, because we had Trek coming for many years at this point.
Hey, good news. The topic is Trek has been renewed for another season.
Yes, we're already in talks about season 5.
Of the topic. Even though we have no idea when seasons 1 through 4 began or ended, but that's another story altogether.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of mishmash.
Now that's a lot of stories we covered. We covered 6 stories. We ran the gamut of all things Trek. And we're not done because we have more gifts for you. We have an additional 86 stories that you can check out over at thetopicistrek.com. That's right. You can. I just plowed right through the one in case. Like, didn't I just look over to see did Chuck have, was he having another drink? I don't know.
Well, you're turning this into a drinking game now. 86 stories. Half our show notes are nothing but these other stories links.
That's right. We just keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. Is there anything else here? So you have lots of things to check out in here about all aspects of Trek. So don't say we don't keep on giving with the show because we've got pages worth of that stuff.
All praise be to the Guardians.
But that's it. It is time to come back from subspace chatter. And I'm sorry, Charlie, but we're done, Charlie.
I want to stay.
Who named this file? I just realized it's called Charlie X-I Want to Stay Veg.
Veg?
There's a, what's with the suffix? Veg. Dot MP3.
Okay.
That's a good call. Oh, I think I know the story behind that, but it's technical and we're not going to get into it during the show. So we will move on from there to our main mission. And our main mission this time, and of course we have to run our obligatory, because we're talking about new episodes of Discovery, so can we have our little
unable to comply. Internal scanner relays have been damaged.
Again. We got Craig, would you get on fixing those internal scanner relays?
I'll get on it right now.
It's between the EPS conduits and the ODN relays. I'm sure you can find it.
Who made these short Jeffries tubes?
It's not the
tube. I don't know.
It's not the length of the tube.
Those walk-around ones they showed in Star Trek V. All right. We're talking about episodes 4 and 5 of Star Trek Discovery Season 3. And as we did last time, what we're going to do is we're going to give a synopsis of each one of the stories, and then we're going to talk about them in a group so we don't confuse ourselves and start talking about something that happened in this one when it really happened in the other one type of thing.
We never do that.
Heavens never, no. Except all the time.
Yeah.
The first story is called Forget Me Not, and it was released on November 5th, 2020, written by Alan McEnroy, Chris Silvestri, and Anthony Marinville, and directed by Hunel M. Culpepper. And Craig is going to give us the synopsis of that.
All right. So Discovery travels to Trill to seek help for Adira, who cannot access her memories, but when the Trill representatives learn that Adira is human, they reject her.
Denied.
Ooh.
Yeah, denied. Meanwhile, Saru consults the ship's computers for suggestions on ways to heal Discovery's emotionally stressed crew. The computer, speaking as Zora, where have we heard that one before? Oh, yeah, wait. The voice I heard in the Star Trek the Star Trek Shorts episode, Calypso, had 2 suggestions. First, Saru had to host a meal with his command staff in order to express gratitude. The second, The crew should be giving the night off to watch some classic silent comedies. The meal ends in chaos, but actually helps Tilly and Stamets reconcile and gives Detmer the push she needs to ask Culber for help. Now, in the caves of Makala, Adira begins to connect to the symbiont. She remembers Gray, a Trill, who was romantically involved with Adira, who became Tal's host after Admiral Sienna Tal's passing. Adira recalls how Gray died in an attack on their generation ship. Adira volunteered to take the symbiont Tal so it would survive. Adira is then able to see Tal's former hosts, Kasha Tal, Jovar Tal, Medela Tal, Kara Tal, Sina Tal, and Gray Tal.
And Nital.
And Adira Tal, huh?
And Nital.
Yeah, I was going to say, Nital. Yeah. Adira Tal decides to stay with the Discovery, and leader Pav suggests that perhaps when the Federation returns, Trill will be open to rejoining. Movie night proves to be an immediate success with the crew. Saru postulates that the Sphere's knowledge is now attempting to predict Discovery, as it once protected the Sphere. As Discovery departs Trill, Adira Tal is able to provide the location of Federation headquarters. When she then sits in her quarters playing a tune she believes is one that Sienna Tal parents sang to him as a child. She also sees Gray Tal, but she doesn't know how or why, and doesn't know or does not want to share the information with anyone.
I'm seeing dead people.
Yes, our first mystery involved introduced. I
see dead Trills.
That episode. And then the second episode was Die Trying, and that was first released on November 12th, 2020, written by Bo-Yu Kim and Erica Lippold, and directed by Maja Vravilo. Chuck will give us the synopsis on that one.
With the information provided by Adira Tal, Discovery reaches Federation headquarters, but spirits are soon dampened. Wah, 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 wah. Saru and Burnham learn from Admiral Vance that the Federation now consists of as little as 38 member worlds, down from its peak of 350. Moving down 38 notches, it's the Federation.
Federation top 10.
Kaminar.
Thanks, Admiral Casey.
And now Kaminar is one of those worlds moving up the charts. As is Non's homeworld, Barzan. So they were all pleasantly surprised that, hey, cool, we're in the club. Who would have seen it coming? Well, it was 500 years ago. Admiral Vance is extremely skeptical about the legitimacy of Discovery's story, as he should be. The Federation has been fighting a war to uphold the Temporal Accords, which outlawed time travel. No screw you with the timeline. Admiral Vance sees the crew as potential temporal agents. Chief Security Officer Lieutenant Willa is also leery of the crew. I would have loved to see Shax in this. Really?
Right.
You people get off my station!
That's right.
While most of Discovery's crew is debriefed by one hologram, Giorgio is debriefed by two holograms and a human. The human tells the Emperor that the Terran universe has been drifting away from this universe. He says that there has not been a crossing over in over 500 years. Oh, the Deep Space Nine storylines that revolved around that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, tempting to prove their worth and loyalty to the Federation, Discovery attempts to find a cure for an illness that is killing a group of refugees. A seed bank ship, the Tikoff, contains pre-mutated samples of the vegetation that can be used to help produce a cure. Discovery has to pull the Tikoff out of an ion storm. Detmer struggles to maneuver Discovery with the tractor beam range. Burnham, Culber, and Non find the Barzan family on board is dead, because the Barzan family was taking care of this seed ship. They go through like groups of curators, and this is the one that was most recent. Everyone was dead except the father, Dr. Attis. Attis went out of phase while attempting to beam during a coronal mass ejection, or that's a CME for you and me, kids. Stamets, Reno, and Tilly managed to stabilize Dr. Attis. The doctor retrieves the needed seed samples, but refuses to leave, even though he is dying. Non-volunteers to stay to carry out the rest of the Barzan's rotation, protecting the seeds. As a result of the mission, Admiral Vance seems willing to accept Discovery, but says that five-year exploratory missions are no longer things Starfleet has the luxury for. But Saru and Burnham convince the Admiral he was wrong. Discovery can serve to remind the Federation of what it once was and could be again. And we still have the mystery of the burn, as well as two new puzzles. Why do so many worlds know the lullaby that Adira knows? And what's wrong with Giorgio? That sounds like the Bullwinkle show. Tune in next time for the lullaby the Adira knows or what's wrong with Giorgio. Fun fact, yes, that was David Cronenberg playing the part of the human with glasses.
Ah. All right. And those are our synopses.
And for those who don't recognize, David Cronenberg is who?
David Cronenberg is a famous director. He some things you might know in genre. He directed The Fly, the remake of The Fly, The Dead Zone, Videodrome, Naked Lunch, very big actor. And he has had parts in other productions, I believe, but it was very odd to see him just show up with his glasses.
Yeah, which he didn't need, so it says.
Right. He said it made him look smart, so he liked him.
All right. Where do we want to start? Forget me not?
Sure.
Talking points? Jump right in, gentlemen.
Let's see. I'm going to go back to...
Well, first off, before we start, I think...
That doesn't make any sense. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, before we start...
Welcome to Craig. First,
To start off with, let's start here. So I was mentioning earlier in the show, or actually right before we started, that I was enjoying Discovery more, I think, on season three, because we're getting more episodic storytelling than we have before, where it was like every show was a cliffhanger to the next. What's going to happen? What's going to happen?
Well, you're not trying to follow 10 threads at once.
Yeah, I know there is an overarching kind of thread, but at the same time, it's not, it's a show per thing. So I'm really enjoying that. And I think that makes the best Trek. I don't know about y'all.
Right. Well, I definitely do enjoy I definitely am enjoying the season. And yes, to that point that although they're not completely standalone because you do have these continuing mysteries out there, they still do have a lot of elements that are standalone and I think make them much more accessible. If you missed this week on Discovery for some reason, I don't think you'd be lost. Whereas when they were so plot intensive in the other seasons, particularly the first season, good luck trying to catch up because it would make no sense what was going on.
Yeah, you'd have to watch the whole thing as a whole, really, to understand what was going on.
Right. I found it interesting that we very quickly jumped into the concept of Zora, that voice that we heard in Calypso was suddenly just there.
It was kind of fading in and out, though. It was fading between the traditional Discovery computer voice and Zora. It was like trying to emerge or express itself.
It also affected the voice, the regular voice, because the regular voice, I think, at some points laughed as well.
Right.
Like it was trying to merge those two things together.
Yeah, it almost felt like a virus. Upgrading progress? What? It was interesting to... I'm still going through Deep Space Nine. I'm most of the way through season six at this point. And seeing the trill again, where they go back to those milky pools, like, that's what happens when they go in there. Obviously, they can hold their breath a really long time when they're under that milky pool substance.
Right.
But to get, obviously, yeah, and this was a visualization, almost like a shared dream, if you will, of right. what happens right. in there. But I thought the effects were very nice. The, of Adira's trepidation about, you know, I don't want this to happen, but, you know, I kind of know that Michael says that I've got to let this connection happen. And to be able to reconnect with the hosts, I thought was fun. And I got a little misty when, you know, they said, hey, we accept you. And, mm-hmm. you know, there were some emotional moments in that episode.
And
very much so.
You know, people were talking about the fact really there's only seven, I think it's a total of seven hosts that Tal has had. But I mean, clearly you see symbionts swimming around in those pools. And, you know, I don't necessarily think a symbiont is always in a host.
No, I know in Deep Space Nine, they had symbionts swimming in the pools. They were waiting for a new host.
Right.
But I was watching and I did not see any symbionts in that episode. Did you? It looked like the pools were mostly empty because they said
no. There definitely was at least one in there.
Oh, you saw one. Okay.
Well, that's the thing I didn't understand was why were they so quick to reject her? Because if they were having, you know, a problem, you know, if they were in a desperate spot where they didn't have many trills, why would they just reject her? Why didn't they help her?
I thought the same thing. And then I went, you know what? This is one of those cultural things. We don't understand their belief system and how, holy and sacred this union between the Trill host and symbiont is. And oh my gosh, here comes a human. What did they do? This is an abomination. You know, you can kind of get your head around some of that.
The leader who was also the woman who was on Schitt's Creek as one of the townspeople, the woman leader of the Trill.
Right.
Because that was Bonnie's first reaction. Look, it's so-and-so. right. Is that she says that the longer that they stay there, the more that this is a really just a complete opposite of their entire belief system to have this thing, if you will, there on the planet, which is why she says you have to leave immediately. You can't stay here. I did have to also go back and watch The Host, which mm-hmm. was the episode of
Next Gen,
The Next Generation, that essentially introduced the concept of the Trill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because there are differences. You know, I hadn't seen the episode in a long time, so I didn't realize, first of all, that the Trill host in that case was another bumpy four-headed alien.
Yeah, they changed it up a little bit. Yeah,
right. So people never complain about changes in Trek because see, it just happens all the time. But the second thing was that in that permutation of it, I get the impression that the Trill, not only with Riker but in all cases, was the only entity that the body was just literally the host, that just was just the shell that the Trill was in, because there seemed to be no real acknowledgement of any of the hosts as individuals aside from the actual symbiont who wasn't there.
This growth and aggregation as you went on. That
right.
concept came along with Dax. And right. she retained the memories, but yet there were elements of Curzon and there were elements of Jadzia. And yeah, that original mm-hmm. host one, it was kind of like when they first introduced the Ferengi or any of the other races in TNG. Right. We saw an evolution that came along. I thought it was interesting and had to stop myself when they said Adira is the first human host. I'm like, well, successful. No, Riker
successful.
Was
successful.
Yes. And that was successful. The key point. You know, Riker was a temporary vessel for a few hours.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah. And it wasn't a pleasant situation. So, they, you know, they kind of hinted back to that as well.
You know, right. I was looking at these. Yeah. That's a good point. I was looking at the pictures of Dax, Jadzia Dax on the Emissary episode of DS9. Mm-hmm. She has no spots and has like a little bit of a ridge line on her forehead. And then, like, the next episode or another episode, I'm not sure what, maybe it's just an early design. There's a picture of her and she looks like she's looks like somebody hit her.
Too many spots.
Yeah, it's just right. It's like the spots are right there behind her eye on her cheek. And then later on, of course, they showed her up with the freckles going all the way down.
Right. All the way down.
Well, yes. We could only imagine.
And, you don't have to imagine. There were some costumes that were pretty revealing.
Yeah.
Right. And I think she kind of acknowledged, oh, no, those go all the way down.
They even showed them down on her legs a couple of times.
So what did you guys think about when we have the flashback to the ship that Adira and Gray are on when the accident happens where Gray is killed? We see this reflection out the window of just this gray, dark gray mass cloud thing come toward the ship, and then all of a sudden the ship is hit. I'm wondering, there's got to be more to that story than that, because what is that all about?
I missed that detail. I'm going to have to go back and watch.
Yeah, right before it happens, you see, and I think it's a reflection of the window. I think the window is behind them, but this big, fast moving dark cloud approaches the ship from the corner of the window, and then bam.
It was a hit and run.
So
I'm not sure what that was.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's part of this stuff that's going on with the raiding parties, because we have hints of that in the next episode, that there's another group of people that are making attacks against the Federation. Or whether it's tied into somehow the burn, or, you know, what the meaning is of what was going on there. But that just struck me. It also struck me that another incident where the way you get killed apparently now on Discovery is you have a shard of something that comes through your chest. You know, in this case, Gray gets a shard of something.
Yep. Stamets gets a shard of something.
A spear to the chest. No.
Yeah.
Double fist punch.
I used to be an adventurer until I went to Discovery and got a shard of... Anyway. Yeah, I also made note in the second episode we're talking about tonight, when we see Federation and Starfleet headquarters, where all the ships
are
connected to the distortion field. I said, wait a minute, we also saw these thread type things connecting Adira to the symbiont. And I'm saying, is that kind of like this running concept of reconnection and threads of communication and kind of weave a web of
first thing I thought of things? When I saw all those ships was the animated series. I was like, oh, another collection of dead ships.
No. Well, also think of, the spore drive that has the connection to the mycelium network. You know, it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's everywhere. So apparently. So, yeah, that all could be related, I guess, at some point on some level.
Yeah, I just see it as somehow involved with connections and this need to connect and connections making things stronger by things working together toward a common goal.
Their crew.
Yeah. Right. Ah. And obviously the theme here is that Discovery wants to be trying to reconnect the worlds of the Federation together.
I got a bone to pick, and it jumped out at me a lot on the second show on Die Trying.
Which we can certainly slide into as well.
Who was it? Not Detmer. Nan. Nan is fluent with all of this technology and the interfaces. I'll just call up the seed ship interface and boop, boop, boop. It's like, you just jumped 900 years. You know, if you jumped 50 years today, someone from 1970 would not be running an iPhone. I'm
sorry. Yes, except that. At the beginning of that part, when they Burnham is the one who mentions the ship. So apparently the ship has been around that long.
Okay. The seed ship is. But they were fiddling around on things on the Federation base too. Then let's take Giorgio. We know something's up with Giorgio, but she takes the dude's communicator. stomps on it, does something. She knows how to blink her eyelashes to phase out these holograms. 900 years have gone by. I don't think they'd still have the same security flaw they did. With
Microsoft doesn't have that kind of a
waiting for that next patch.
Your holograms are based on IE6. God, patch them already.
Well, see, there somebody in sector 072 has the patch, but the subspace communications are down, so they can't get through.
They're downloading it at 300 baud.
Hey, I was just thinking, Discovery really needs to update their OS.
Yes.
Well, that could have some security issues right off
the bat. That's true. Everything they have can be hacked very easily now. Mm-hmm. I mean, you never know. Some entity might be able to get on board and instantly access all of their records.
Nah.
That never happens.
Silly.
We don't need that. Turn our firewall off. Yeah, we don't need that.
Password.
And how many of you think that the reason that we see the security officer Nan leave the ship is because we're certainly going to see Lieutenant Willa suddenly being on the ship in charge of security.
Oh, you think so?
I'm okay with some crew changes here and there. I'm okay with that. I think that makes
sense. I just feel like Vance is going to want to, you know, let's still keep an eye on him. And he assigns her to work on the ship.
I really liked the friction they put between Vance and Burnham. That was like a throwback to Burnham wanting to punch somebody in the nose in season one. It was like reckless, but you know, Saru is there trying to hold the reins. and they did come to some kind of compromise, and he spoke of it at the end. He said, "You might want to watch that tone of yours." So,
hey, right, you know, one, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
One thing I do like is now that Saru and Michael are working together and she's number one and he's the captain. You know, they are in the season one, they kind of showed some of that friction that they were having when they were on the Shenzhou.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where it was a little bit competitive. And if you read the book, Desperate Hours, the first Discovery novel. There's a lot more to that give and take that they talk about. So it kind of is really nice to see that they finally crossed that bridge and they're, you know, they're on the same page and working together. And because Michael got, you know, first officer when he thought he was going to get it is in the book, you know, so it's cool to see how they kind of worked that out.
Does anybody have any theories about what the heck is going on with Giorgio?
I think she has that song running through her head. She was just sitting there going through the...
Oh, so she has the earworm. She's got the It's a Small World of the universe.
Could it have something to do with... they say that everything in your universe resonates at a certain frequency, and when you're brought to the other universe, you can be detected because you're not in sync with that frequency. If those universes have been drifting apart, maybe it's some sort of detachment issue.
Well, it could be, although it seems right, because it just seems odd that right after she's told about it, it would start to happen other than us kind of seeing hints of it before. And kind of, because I think if we had seen hints of that before, if that is indeed the case, I think it would even resonate with her more when she's told this, like, oh, yes, well, that would, you know, into herself, she wouldn't tell him, but that makes sense because I'm not feeling quite right here.
I wonder if her lapse is related to Detmer's lapse as well.
Well, I think Detmer got a knock to the head. I don't know. Could be.
Well, I think she got a knock to the head, but I think she's, I just feel like she's dealing with other issues other than just the, like a concussion or something.
We did
like
get that. A couple of mentions from Nan about Arium too. So that was a nice mention.
Mm-hmm. Even get to see her in a very quick flashback in the previously on Star Trek Discovery.
Right. I was in a hurry. And I had to fast forward through some of those.
I'm hoping that we have a nicer payoff to this song this time around than we did with Battlestar Galactica with How Long the Watchtower.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice hook.
And now introducing the Rolling Stones. They're going to...
That was anticlimactic, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
I was wondering when we were going to get a payoff of seeing some technology that the writers would envision for, you know, 1,000 years.
That was fun when they
that future.
Yeah, when they first entered that Federation mm-hmm. zone and they're like, detached nacelles, where do you put the warp core? You know, they're all ogling over the technology and up against the windows looking at the ships. And then they got a dose of reality from the people of what's going on. But
I need to go back and watch that scene a little closer because I didn't see the detached nacelles. They just mentioned it. And then, but we did see
the Voyager.
Jay. It's almost caught up with the Enterprise with the number scheme.
Well, I got a kick out of that because you could go with several letters, but notice they went with Jay.
Janeway.
Who's with Captain of the Voyager?
Oh, yeah.
Let's begin with Jay. I also noticed that if you listen very carefully, and Jeff Russo talked about doing this type of thing, you hear hints of the Voyager theme as they see Voyager.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they were very careful on the music
as well.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a lot of the ships that we see inside the distortion field at headquarters are the same models that we saw in the shot where we saw all the ships exploding as the cause of the burn, which is episode before last.
Oh, they didn't really change the design between the 100.
Those were ships, and this is like 120 years ago, right? 100 to 120 years ago with the burn. So either these were remaining ships of those or just slight variations of them in terms of design. But it was interesting to see that probably those models now that were kind of not that well formed because they just need them for a long shot in the first mm-hmm. appearance. Now you're going by them closer. So they probably said, well, that one, and that one, let's build those out a bit more. Cause we go by I don't know how they identify it as such, but they identify a Constitution class.
Yeah. Ship.
And I'm going, well, why did they identify that as Constitution class?
I don't know.
I couldn't see the registration or anything on it. If it was Enterprise or not.
Mm-hmm. That's a floating rainforest.
Yes, yeah, so we did see the floating rainforest, indeed.
Well, we did also see some other things, like as they were walking around, the little walkway was appearing as they were walking.
Right, which is the programmable matter. Right. Mm-hmm.
There was also chairs and tables with no legs, just floating there, but able to hold up whatever they held up, which I thought was... Yeah. Why would we need that in the future? That seems like a waste of energy, in my opinion.
Chuck, so it doesn't scratch the floor.
It doesn't leave the furniture dents.
Yeah.
Furniture dents in the carpet. That's amazing technology. Well, I'd buy that today.
Oh, wait, the floor is programmable matter. It doesn't get dents. It doesn't.
Have you not yelled at your kid? Don't drag that chair across the floor.
Honey, how come? Did you do the vacuuming? Yes. Where are the vacuum marks? I vacuumed them all up.
Oh, the vacuum floats too.
Yeah. I don't need to vacuum my programmable matter floor.
Hey, and the transporters are like super fast.
Yes. I thought the same thing when they beamed Saru. Where was it at the end? You saw the traditional one, like, wow. Suddenly the transporter seems really slow. You see the gold and it takes 3 seconds to beam instead of.
Yep.
They should have used their own personal ones that they now have themselves. We also get to find out that yes, you can have a more annoying emergency medical hologram than the doctor.
Oh, the one that was
that
sticking
just poking around. The one that's poking around Burnham and
2 inches Saru from her face. Yeah,
random observations about them.
He was doing everything but crawling in their ear.
Yeah, and I expect to see more of those in the future. So hopefully if they pop over at some point to that Voyager J, that the doctor will be over there.
Yeah.
It's kind of hanging around.
Please state that. Forget it.
Yeah.
It'd be funny to see Robert Picardo currently, like he's an older EMH.
He can do it.
How does that work? How does that work?
We've advanced technology. We can age.
When they brought data back.
Yeah. Alrighty.
And do we think we know what would be inside of a Federation coloring book, or what's involved with interstellar shopping that the computer was suggesting as activities for the crew in the first episode? It's like ways to engage the crew. Well, how about some coloring books? Coloring books. What are you
talking about? I think the marketing department is reaching there. They're giving us a hint of what's to come when in the off season.
Computer, replicate some Star Wars Legos.
Yeah.
How about some coloring books? No. How about a helmet with a siren on top? There you go.
Yeah.
There. Now you're talking.
Yeah.
Try this on, Tilly. Right.
Any additional thoughts on either of our two episodes before we go and rate them?
Take the silence. No. Whoop. Someone on mute.
Okay.
Yep. No, I got nothing here. Let's go.
Okay. Let's begin with Forget Me Not.
Oh, I forgot.
Of course, the episode where we travel to Trill.
Yes.
And I am going to give that episode... I'm going to give that episode an 8.5. I liked it a lot. I think that I felt it was a little underpaced in some places. I thought it was very emotional toward the end. So I'd give it an 8.5. I will go next to Craig.
I would also agree. I thought it drug a little bit in a few places, but overall I thought it was a emotional episode and very good. So 8.5.
Okay. And Chuck?
Well, we'll make it a trifecta of 8.5. So that way it makes the averaging easy. Same thing for similar reasons. Okay. It was very well written. I did like the emotional aspect to it. I miss that kind of writing when you can evoke that and elicit that emotional response from the viewer. That's some good writing and acting.
And then we move on to Die Trying, the episode in which we find out that Tilly, Stamets and Reno should never be in the same room together doing anything, apparently, because they just get each other's nerves constantly.
Except stand-up comedy. We've learned to accept. No, we haven't.
Yeah, no, we haven't.
Right. So we will begin with, we'll go backwards there. So we'll begin with Chuck on that one.
I'm going to give this one also an 8.5. I liked the conflict between, you know, as I said earlier, Vance and Burnham. I was sort of eager for both of those storylines to do their thing, you know, with the seed ship mission and, what all was going on in the show. It seemed a lot of times when there's a couple of storylines going on, they tie together and that didn't really feel like it happened in this one, unless you want to go back to that connection metaphor, maybe perhaps, So I'm another 8.5. I did like it. Like Craig said, it felt like there was a finish and we can tell another story next week without having to remember too hard of what happened in the last five.
Okay, very good. And go next to you, Craig.
I'm going to say that I enjoyed seeing the new technology, some of the updated ships and stuff like that. I think that overall the story was pretty good. I'm going to say I'm also going to give this an 8.5. I did, by the way, I did go try and look for the Tikhov name because I thought, is that the name? I said that can't be the name of the Norway seed bank, you know, the Doomsday Vault.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Yeah, but it was not. Okay. That was my first
Come
thought.
On, writers. Yeah. Where's?
Oh, by the way, even my wife said that Reno is becoming her favorite character.
She's got that snarky attitude that resonates well.
I like how she was ordering chips.
Yeah,
chips. I need something to drink.
Now I'm gonna need something to drink. Yeah, her interrogation was my favorite.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I'm. I'm teetering between an 8 and an 8.5, so I'm going to go an 8.25 on this one. I felt like the Seed Chip story seemed to be missing a little something, and I can't identify what that was. I think for the most part, it was very good. There was just a little something that was missing. I don't know whether it was that they were able to pull out the ship a little too easily or something just didn't quite connect there all the way, but I thought it didn't have an emotional impact in spite of that. And it also, I thought the two stories did connect together in the fact that Discovery is proving itself to a Federation that's 930 years removed from it. That they go, well, you're a nice derelict ship and just kind of like an antique and what can you do? Mm-hmm. The fact that they were going this mission and they proved that they actually can do something. So hopefully they do. They did make enough an impression on Vance to at least give them some leeway in what they do.
I just thought there was a little too easy merging of people and technology in such a short time frame. I mean, they've only been in the future for a few weeks.
They should be like fumbling around with it.
Exactly. I know it's not a like for like comparison, but if somebody from the year 1100 showed up right now, not hey,
we
a
used
clue,
to have
people.
Flip phones, you know, not anymore.
Where's your horse? You know, it's like, take me to the smithy. We wouldn't even be speaking the same English at this point. We need a universal translator to talk to someone from our own planet.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I thought it was just a little too easy for them to, you know, blend in and start using the iPhone, as it were.
Well, I think they kind of, you have to make a choice there, though, right? It's like, how much of the story is that?
Well, maybe a montage of people in training. You know, I got to go take my stupid security training once a year, and it's the same questions.
But remember, the crew hasn't done any of that. I mean, the only person that really has any experience with that tech is Burnham, because she's lived with it for a year.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That was her initiation period. But how does... Right, how does Nan know to go do 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 do? You know, it's like,
well, again, that's not a new ship. That's an older ship.
And they're still using the same operating system from 9 years ago, 900 years ago.
Sure. Hey, seeds are seeds. Although I thought it was the giant, pachinko machine when it came to like the seed. Okay.
Oh my gosh, that one goes off,
and that one goes off.
Yeah, that turned me off right there. It's like clunk, 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 clunk.
Oh yeah.
Why don't you just point to the, it should be like Amazon where the little robot goes up and gets you the pod, because it was at arm's reach.
Yeah, it was eye level. So
exactly.
That was good.
They go, we made you look up here, but it's actually right down over here.
Yeah. And what if it were up there? That just seemed like gratuitous effects to me.
So many questions. I guess it's just to prove they got a lot of seeds there. Although apparently they have no more Venus flytraps because they opened that seed pod up. But
hey, you know what? I'm sorry. Did you score it already? Did you put your score?
I did.
8.25.
I'll say one thing. I think it just occurred to me when you said it was missing a little something. Mm-hmm. I think it's that I have a feeling that it has to do with his family was in the Stasis tubes or whatever you want to call them, and they were dead.
Right.
They were so quick to write them off. There wasn't anything, you know, to emotionally engage you with. I almost forgot about them until we were just talking about the episode again.
Well, I did like the fact that they tried
to do that with the projection, right?
Yeah, and I did like
the projection. They tried to do that. Yeah. So
I like the fact that they brought that decision where Nan says just because you don't understand another culture's decision doesn't make it irrelevant or logical or whatever the phrase was. Like, yeah, you know, you gotta sometimes, you know, take a look at not everybody's got the same Earth-centric value system and bases decisions on that. To drive that decision. And then Burnham, of course, said, you know, sometimes there are no good decisions. There's only the ones you got to live with. So yeah, I did like that exchange about, we don't always say, oh, they're dead, I'm going to go. You know, that's the way you and I might look at it. But, No, right, not but necessarily.
Her standpoint was coming from that, well, the Federation's really is nobody left behind type of thing. So,
right.
Yeah, so you got a conflict there, and you have to make one choice or the other. Do we think we'll see Nan again?
I'm skeptical. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, if she's kind of going to be doing what she said she's going to be doing, she's essentially stuck there on the ship. So,
what was the comment about her eyes? I didn't quite catch that. You know, because Burnham said, "Your eyes." She goes, "Yep, real air, real me." I didn't see any difference in the eyes because it was a dark scene.
It was kind of dark. But I was like, oh, okay, so her eye, I mean.
They weren't glowing. I get it. They still had sclera, the white parts on them. I'm like, what were we supposed to have taken away from that exchange?
I'm trying to call that up right now because I'm trying to figure out if she has, like, contact lenses as the character.
It was a minimal effect, if there were. I'm sorry, that was just that was,
okay. Yeah, but I think that would be the implication that, you know, the eye color has, or the look of the eyes has changed because she's now in her natural environment.
Yeah, she had like it looked like she had like Geordi LaForge kind of contacts
When she was on Discovery.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, it was very minimal. They need to do more close-ups of her.
Yeah, no, but it was, they had like, shit, I'm trying to find a good picture, but yeah, they were kind of bluish, like they were contacts, like enhanced or something. There's a good picture.
I thought it was going to be more obvious, like she went from all black eyes to, oh, we can see the whites of your eyes now.
But, there you go. No. I just sent it to you in Messenger. You can go check it out.
In Messenger.
Yeah, you'll see what I'm talking about. Blow that up and you'll see she has like these blue contacts in.
As a, okay. That's when she was on Discovery?
Yes, when she was in her environment.
And what were they when they were on the seed ship? Was it brown?
Yeah, it was like dark eyes, you know, regular.
All righty. Take your word for it. Well, she doesn't need the breathing apparatus. Does that mean the things on her cheeks come out, or are those permanent?
Little rivets?
No, because she still had them throughout the episode.
Right.
So I don't know how those
But she doesn't
attached.
Need them.
Right.
Well, it, like snaps. Like a blue jean.
I know they come off with, you know, the makeup remover, but that's, you know.
But that's all together. That's kind of correct. How the sausages, maybe we talk about that stuff. All right. Well, with that, it's time to come back from Warp Speed Roundtable and refill the dilithium chamber. Don't tell anyone we have dilithium to fill the chamber with, you know, burn and such. And warp on out of here. You can find me, Clinton, over at Comedy Forecast, all one word.
Wait, we're missing one thing.
What are we missing?
Oh,
Warp Speed Roundtable.
I blew right past that because I said the reason I blew past that. In the show notes, which you guys, you don't see this because we don't publish this. I have this table of all the characters that are recurring characters.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that table is now approaching the length of the stories we didn't cover. I just had to add like four more characters to that sheet. And I don't know, can I take anybody away from this?
No. Nope.
That's probably the reason why I was asking about Nan. Because like, that would free up a space if I took Nan out of there.
Right.
All right, so let's go to Warp Speed Roundtable because I've scrolled to the bottom of that chart. So this time around, we did not get an answer in this episode of what caused the burn. Nobody seems to know what caused the burn. There's theories, but no one knows. So my question this week is, what do you think caused the burn? And I will accept wrong answers only. So who would like to go first?
You, Clinton.
I will go first. Okay.
Oh, bad idea.
My idea is, you know, they have those videos on YouTube, which are the spicy hot wings. So my theory is that stayed on as a thing and it just became more and more popular. And one day it just reached critical mass with people watching the videos and trying to do that challenge on vessels with dilithium crystals and bam, everything just went up.
That like the cinnamon challenge?
Yeah. It just, everything just exploded at one time. It's just too darn hot.
But now, I got to, before we answer this question, is it only Federation ships that use dilithium? Because I thought the Klingons used them too.
No, it's I don't believe it is, but I mean, they were talking about the fleet being decimated. So
yeah,
I don't think it was just Federation ships, because otherwise, if it was just Federation ships, ships would be traveling around without it.
Did they not show other ships? I think they showed other ships besides Federation.
It seemed to be
Didn't show them, but Book said all the dilithium in the universe just exploded. In the known universe. Something to that extent. So it wasn't just Federation ships.
So what caused it, Craig? Tell us.
I think somebody left a match burning.
In all the ships? A trans-dimensional...
Somebody let it get down. Somebody burned their finger and dropped a match. Oh, and, you know, kind of caught everything on fire. Started with the drapes.
And then you can Mrs. say O'Leary's, cascade, you know, reaction.
Captain O'Leary's cow kicked over a lantern.
That's right. That's it.
On the USS Chicago. Look at that.
What are the odds? Now, that wasn't my theory, by the way.
Oh, well, do share.
Okay, for this one, I'm going to do a voice impression. Friend Kirk, can I interest you in some potions? It was Cyrano Jones. Come on, you all know what happened.
The spike and flame gems. That's what did it.
Right.
The word flame in gem should have been a clue what was going on there. Did not know that. I knew there was something about that guy we didn't like. All right. But if you have a theory, please tell us about it, because it can be no worse than any of ours. Yeah. But remember, wrong answers only. Don't think too hard about it, because we want wrong answers only.
And you can't.
I've already given my plug.
You can't consult an astro. No going to Dr. Erin McDonald and saying, what do you think caused it?
No.
I'm sure she can come up with a funnier answer, but don't go science.
She might actually know besides. So don't. None of that. All right. So since I've already given my plug, I'm going to be over here guarding dilithium. And why don't you guys, who speaks for you guys this week?
Dilithium. What are you vaping or something? What's the?
I'm investing in dilithium futures.
Yeah. You go ahead, Chuck. Do you feel up to it?
You can reach us by searching for Technorama Podcast on any of your familiar search engine friends and find us.
One piece. No, put those others back. Sorry. Go ahead. Keep going.
We have trading going on the trading floor now. chuckchat.com/technorama is where you can find our podcast. There's also, I have to sneak in a quick plug for Podcasting for Dummies 4th season. The companion podcast is out. I've got another episode coming out on Wednesday. What would that be? The 18th? No, Tuesday the 17th. Something like that. Yeah, Tuesday they come out on 17th. Tuesdays. Okay. Tuesday is the 17th. We're going to be doing these every other Wednesday, every other Tuesday on Podcasting for Dummies. You can find that over at podcastingfordummies.com.
Very good. And I just scored enough money for us to survive through our next season we didn't need all the dilithium, did we? I just, you know, just one of the.
We just need enough to power the podcast for another week. Then we get our next mission. Again?
Come on, man.
Next case. We're good. All right, so time to hit the theme, boys.
It's in here somewhere. Got it.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you, so follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, the stores of dilithium crystals, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek,
don't put on
the red shirt.
These are not
It burns!
These are not the dilithium crystals you're looking for.